I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, I got a chance to pepper socialist state lawmaker Sean Scott with questions about his latest tax proposal. Plus, Governor Bob Ferguson pledging to work on a cuts-only budget. But do you believe him? And the DOJ now suing blue states like Washington over withholding voter data. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at UndividedPod.com. That's UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Gosh, you guys really don't like change. We did our live show 2 hours early yesterday. I thought the internet would have a meltdown, but we survived. We're here. We're back on schedule, and it was a worthy reason to have an earlier show. I went down to Olympia. It's tough because I love that aspect of this job. I mean, that's my background, right? I love reporting. I love asking politicians questions, but we do a live show, you know, Monday through Thursday, and so it's hard for me to break away. So when we think it's going to be worth it, we'll move the show around for it. And I think yesterday was. So as you know, socialist state lawmaker Sean Scott, and he's a socialist. He's very proud of it, by the way. You can tell that he feels like socialism is having a moment. And so he's really leaning into, because I think he calls himself a democratic socialist, but he's really leaning into the socialist part of it after what happened in Seattle and New York. So it's interesting. He's very like up on a high horse right now. But he is introducing a new payroll tax. This is a concept Democrats tried to push last year, but even given, you know, $12 billion in new taxes, they shelved it because they were worried that businesses would just up and leave. But Sean Scott is reintroducing it. It would raise $5.5 billion every 2 years. And it would be a payroll tax for businesses on salaries over $125,000 a year. And so Sean Scott had a press conference about it on the steps of the state capitol. And of course, most of his remarks were about blaming Orange Man bad for the predicament we find ourselves in.
The Trump administration has pursued a politics of division. Bogus panics over immigration and queer people scare Americans into believing that their adversaries are other members of the working class instead of the billionaires who got huge tax breaks by Trump's HR 1 budget. Washington state corporations T-Mobile, Amazon, and Microsoft took money that they saved from tax breaks enacted by the state legislature and used it to donate to Trump's gilded ballroom. The way for Washingtonians to fight back is to build a bolder Washington, a Washington that defends the people, a Washington that defends the programs that people depend on, while the other Washington defunds them.
Okay. And again, and one of the things I pointed out to him is he's blaming the need for this new payroll tax on the big one big beautiful bill. But this time last year on the show, we were leaking internal information that Democrats were going to introduce a payroll tax statewide this time last year before President Donald Trump was even sworn in for a second term and before the one big beautiful bill was even a glimmer in his eye. So you can't blame it on Trump. You've wanted this tax. Democrats have wanted this tax. You just find different reasons to introduce it and try to push it down the throats of taxpayers. So let's just, everything is, though, if you can blame it on Donald Trump, voters in this state just eat it up. So that's what they're going to do. So I got a chance to ask Sean Scott some questions. And, you know, credit to him for not ignoring me. He did allow me to ask questions, although he referred to me as this person. I think he was trying to make me feel unimportant, but didn't succeed in that. But the obvious question I have for him is, you know, we don't need to guess what will happen with this tax because Seattle already has a payroll tax. They call it the Jumpstart Tax. They passed it in 2020. And what has happened? Well, immediately after they passed it, Amazon said, okay, if you're going to punish us and single us out for taxation, we're going to move jobs to Bellevue. So Amazon moved 10,000 jobs to Bellevue. And what happened to the revenue that Seattle was counting on from the Jumpstart Tax? Just crashed and burned. And so now they're like, oh, well, we got to find other ways to tax people because they moved the job. So Amazon made a threat. They made good on the threat. So there's no reason to believe that if you don't take that tax, spread it statewide, that companies like now Microsoft that are threatening to move jobs, if you pass it, will do exactly that. And so I asked Sean Scott what he thinks about that.
Do you understand that there is a likelihood
that businesses could decide, Microsoft just said they would,
sure,
to move jobs out of the state. And are you concerned about that?
Right. So we have a situation with many major corporations, in particular Amazon and Microsoft, which I think one of which you had mentioned, have already been shedding jobs. They didn't need tax policy to be an impetus to invest in artificial intelligence. And the goal of that technology is to divest from human labor. We have seen many times in the state legislature the threat of jobs being relocated hung over the head of state lawmakers. Most famously, perhaps, in the example of Boeing, where they shook the state legislature down for the single largest corporate welfare package that was granted by a state government in the history of the republic. And then they moved the jobs anyway. I am much more concerned about working people who are going to be displaced, working people who might move from Washington because they can't afford childcare, because they can't afford the cost of medicine, because this is not a good place to try to start or raise a family or go to school. The perspective that you are speaking from, frankly, is very well represented in the state legislature by the major corporations that have spent millions over the years lobbying the state legislature, and they expect a return on investment. Those aren't the entities that I center in my policymaking. I believe that they're spoken for enough in Olympia.
Would you like them to leave, Representative Scott? Do you think that Amazon and Microsoft are a net good for our state?
Say more about that. When you say net good, what do you mean?
Do you think they contribute and add more value to our state than they detract?
I think that workers, were they to collectivize, could come up with something like Amazon on their own, but that Amazon has a very difficult time providing the value that you would like to see in reverse. In other words, I think that working people getting together, forming unions, coming out and lobbying for policy such as this could create something that resembled an Amazon corporation without that added layer of exploitation. But I don't know that Amazon's leadership, such as it is, would be able to do something like that on its own. So I'm much more concerned with the social good of people that are in Washington state, that want to be here, that believe in Washington state enough to fight for well-funded public programs. And they can speak for themselves through other channels if they would like to.
Wow, where do I even start with that? So he seems indifferent to the idea that Amazon and Microsoft would move jobs out of the state. And he represents the area of Seattle that includes Amazon. So this is a pretty shocking thing, especially when he said, my concern is with the people of the state. And he even says in there, which I thought was funny and I asked him about later, that Washington is not a good place to start a family and go to school. And I thought, whoa, I kind of agree with you there. And it's interesting, but I mean, who's been in charge of Washington for 40 years? Democrats. So he threw these fellow Democrats right under the bus. But first of all, the fact that he has to stop and think about whether Amazon and Microsoft are a net good for our state is insane. All the free stuff, quote unquote free, that he wants for people, that he's promising to people, Microsoft and Amazon pay for most of it. And so what do you think the quality of life is going to be for the people you claim to care about, the working people, if they leave? And then to suggest, I mean, this just shows his lack of really experience or knowledge about how the economy works or how businesses work. The idea that he thinks workers could form a collective and do the same thing Amazon does is just about the dumbest thing I have ever heard, truly. But it just shows the mindset there. So there's that whole issue of, do you care if Amazon and Microsoft leave? And, you know, what are the implications? But then on a broader scale, there's this issue of, do you not understand how much our state budget and how much our taxes have ballooned in recent years? Because he keeps saying, while he's down there, and why we need this new tax, that we can't fund very basic things.
Counting on increasingly unreliable federal grants to fund basic services like public safety and climate infrastructure is no longer an option.
First of all, climate infrastructure isn't a basic thing, and you're claiming to be worried about public safety when you for years have been a police abolitionist. So spare me your concern that we can't fund basic public safety needs. But the core issue I have with this is this. Our budget has grown exponentially over the years. And if he was up there saying, basically, being honest, I want to pay for more stuff. You know, I want to keep paying for laser hair removal for transgender inmates and boob jobs for transgender inmates. I want to keep paying $19 million a year for the Office of Equity. I want to keep, you know, sending out money so people with a certain skin pigmentation can buy homes, can get their consumer debt paid off, and can get help starting businesses. So that's why I want to pay for more stuff. So we need this money. No, he's not saying that. He's saying we can't pay for the basics, when the reality is we have more than enough money to pay for the basics. So I asked him about the idea that this really is a problem with where we're prioritizing the money we already have versus needing to get more money in.
You know, there seems to be this sort of insinuation that we don't have the money we need to pay for the basics. I think you articulated some of the basic things that people are lacking. Our state budget has ballooned 170%, accounting for inflation, since 1991. Right. We just passed the largest tax increase in state history. Mm-hmm. Do we have a spending problem, a priority problem, or do we have a revenue problem?
Well, in the 2025 legislative session, Washington State also made $7 billion worth of cuts. Those were cuts to childcare, additional cuts to higher education, additional cuts to the pension plans of retired public employees. So the question that I would ask is, how many cuts is enough? Maybe we should be taking actually more out of public schools. That would be something that would really attract businesses to Washington State, wouldn't it be, if we had defunded public schools? If childcare was not available for people that wanted to come to Washington State to start a family, what would that do to the tax base? So I think that the train of thought that you're going down with the bent of questioning is a dangerous one, because it's a austerity vision for
dangerous.
Our state, where $7 billion worth of cuts is not enough. And so what we're here today to talk about is the fact that revenue is the way that we solve many of the problems that are posed in front of us. And so that's what this is about today.
How can you call it austerity, though, when it's ballooned
100%? We've heard quite a lot from 70%. This person. I just want to make sure that we have others with the ability to ask questions as well. And then if we come back to you, if nobody else has anything, then we can go on.
Anyone? No. So a lot of things there. He called it dangerous for me to ask whether why we don't have enough money to pay for the necessities when our budget is 170% larger, even counting for inflation, than it was 30 years ago. He said that's a dangerous line of questioning. That's insane. How can you say this is austerity? And he talks about, oh, do you want us to make more cuts? He doesn't understand that we spent more money than we had, right? We spent more money than we had. That's the basics. And that's a problem. So then you have to cut because you don't have more money coming in, unless, like he does, you want to pass all these outrageous taxes. But he suggests that if we keep cutting, we have to cut the basics. And they want you to be scared, right? Oh, we have to cut public safety. Oh, we have to cut education. It's like, no, let's talk about the things that aren't basics, basic core functions of government that you can cut. And I just named several of them. And you give me one day with your budget and I'll go through and show a bunch of other things that aren't core basic services. So you're basically saying right there, Sean Scott, and you're admitting that we'll cut education before we cut laser hair removal for transgender inmates. We'll cut public safety before we cut the Office of Equity. We'll cut childcare services that we offer that we think are so important before we take away reparations to people based on skin pigmentation who weren't actually tied in any way to the negative impacts of slavery. That's what he's saying there. That's what I take away from it. So then at the end, he tries to move on. And this is one of the other things. Where are all the journalists? There were like a dozen reporters there. Three or four of us asked questions. And I just kept asking him questions because the other legacy media didn't have any. And these are the same people in Olympia who are going to try again this session to keep me and other independent journalists out of the press corps and out of press conferences. I mean, they made us threaten to sue them last year to include us. What are you stopping me from? Asking questions at press conferences that you're not asking questions at? So he says, let's let other people ask a question. And he spends like 20 seconds of awkward silence and nobody else. There were reporters there that didn't ask a single question. Can you imagine that? I mean, for those of you who aren't even reporters, have never worked as journalists in your life, how many questions would you have of Sean Scott about that tax proposal? Probably endless. I could have asked him questions for an hour. And we have legacy news reporters who don't have one. Don't have one question about such a significant issue. And so he tries, after calling my line of questioning dangerous, to move on to someone else. There were no other takers. So he had no choice but to go back to me.
Okay.
How many taxes is enough? I mean, is there a point of revenue where you'd be satisfied with the number of taxes, the amount of revenue we have?
Yeah, well, I think taxes...
You guys laugh, but real people are impacted by these taxes. You know this.
That's right.
We saw a ton of taxes go up.
So what I would say is that the taxing in and of itself is not the social good. The good is making sure that institutions that people rely on are well-funded. So as long as we are still hearing from people talking about not being able to have affordable housing, people having a hard time getting a higher education, people who are going to be kicked off of the Medicaid rolls, people who are having a hard time accessing basic services, taxing as a matter of basic arithmetic is the way that we get to funding those programs. So as long as we have people that are willing to come down to Olympia in the middle of the day when it's not even the legislative session to say that we need basic services funded, that's my gauge for whether or not we have done enough on the revenue question in Washington State. This is the answer.
30
there
people?
Seems to be a general kind of laughter or disdain for job creators. And the truth is our state has, and that's proof of it. The truth is, you know, there are a ton of businesses who will be impacted. Several restaurants near Amazon just closed. And the result is Amazon's moving jobs out. There's this entire ecosystem of small businesses that relies on those jobs being there.
Right.
So this sort of disdain or scoffing for the contributions that some of those major corporations have made up and down our economy is sort of bewildering to people who understand it.
Sure. So the laughter that you hear has to do with the fact that many of the people who are represented here at this rally today are working people who are largely responsible for the profits that those companies have created. We see the policy outcomes of the corporations very, very well reflected. The policy imperatives of the people who helped to create that wealth by selling their labor to those corporations, less well represented. And I think that sometimes laughter speaks for itself. There are a lot of people who I think are quite used to seeing big business mouthpieces of various kinds trumpet some of the same talking points. This is a space where we're trying to talk about what it looks like to invert how our politics look. What does it look like to actually put working people at the center of them, as opposed to big corporations that, as I said before, are quite spoken for in Olympia?
Big business mouthpiece. I guess that's what I am, Deshaun Scott. Or maybe have common sense and understand that you might hate them, but they do a lot for our economy. And the sanctimonious giggling of the socialists behind him, of the people demanding handouts, I couldn't tolerate it anymore. I had to point it out. Because every time there was any sort of hint or question about our taxes too high, you know, what about, what will this do to the businesses, et cetera, there was this giggling. The derision was genuinely disgusting by these people who were like, gimme, 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 gimme. I don't want to contribute at all. Gimme, 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 gimme. And then you point out like, hey, these are job creators, right? The giggling was unbearable. Just absolutely outrageous. So something else I want to point out. There were a couple other speakers who he invited to talk, including this woman with the Low Income Housing Alliance. They work on homelessness.
Without significant progressive tax reform, our communities will continue to suffer and homelessness will grow.
Without significant tax reform, homelessness will grow. We spend billions of dollars on homelessness. We've spent countless billions of dollars in the last 10 years, and what has happened? It's gotten worse. It's gotten significantly worse. In fact, the more money we spend on it, the worse it gets. Similar to education in our state. The more money we give, the worse education gets. The more taxpayer money that goes to the teachers' union, the worse education gets. And so it's this same idea that more money is the solution to all these problems, when more money has already proven not to be the solution, not only not to be the solution to these problems, but more government and more money going to government to solve something has actually made, in multiple instances, these problems worse. There was also this woman, and I had to play this, and look, veteran, she says she's a veteran, like, thank you, ma'am, for your service to our country, I appreciate it. But they were there and they were talking, of course, because they made this all about Donald Trump and he's doing all these evil things and cutting all this money and he's going to have all these requirements to get things like unemployment or SNAP benefits, and it's just horrible. And listening to this woman who says she's like disabled, homeless, disabled veteran who moved in with her two adult disabled sons, I just thought to myself, you don't want to lift a finger.
Who and where am I going to go to be determined to be disabled for these programs? Where are the forms? Who's going to fill out the forms? What are the requirements? What are the definitions of disability? On top of all the labor that I will have to do for my family to recertify every 3 months, which I can't even do myself. I have to rely on case managers who already have me on a caseload of 150 plus per case manager at some of the programs I'm in. So right now, progressive revenue is greatly needed to help individuals like myself who are disabled to be able to get the services we need. And for things like, I need to get back with Voc Rehab to finish my one class to finish my master's degree at UW so that I can look for employment, which is also something I want to do as a disabled veteran. So we need progressive revenue in this state to overcome what is happening at the federal level to help individuals like myself.
You need a master's degree to look for a job? You're waiting for a master? I don't have a master's degree. I have a job. In fact, most people I know. Nicole, you got a master's degree? No, didn't think so. She has a job. Most people I know, probably 95%, don't have a master's degree. And they have jobs. And you have time to go to UW to get your master's degree and energy to do the courses and the coursework. But you're saying you don't have energy to figure out where you have to go or how you have to prove that you're disabled to qualify for these federal benefits? Seems like that would be much easier than taking a master's course and getting your master's degree. No, they don't want to lift a finger. It's wild. And can I... Oh, so we wanted to ask... And Carlene Johnson with the Center Square, one of the only other people there who actually asked questions that were meaningful and difficult. We wanted to ask the lady who works on homelessness, how will more money solve this when more money hasn't solved it? I wanted to ask this woman, what do you mean that you can take a master's class, but you can't figure out how to prove that you're disabled? But Sean Scott wouldn't let us ask him any questions.
Are other folks who spoke willing to take any questions?
No. No, they're not. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Okay, you said
before you opened this up, you said that others who spoke would be willing to take questions.
I'll take questions on their behalf. If you have something, a question
for somebody
who spoke.
My question was going to be for Fatima, because you came to work, you said, from Meta. Do you still work there? You don't?
Okay. But that's the extent of... That's if you have a question for me, that's perfectly fine.
I'll speak for them. And he did suggest they would take questions, and even when she asked, one woman says, sure. And he says, no, they won't. I thought he was joking. I'll speak for them. I mean, he was so sanctimonious and up on his high horse. It just really gave me the ick. Carlene Johnson, who again works for the Center Square, does great reporting. She's been a journalist in Seattle for like 20 to 30 years. And he had this just response to one of her questions. Well, if you know how the legislature works, Sean, you've been in the legislature for one session, 1 year. You were just elected. It's the only position you've ever been elected to. She's been reporting on politics in the legislature for almost as long as you have been alive. It was wild. And can I just point out one other thing? Did anyone else, I'm sorry, this has been bothering me all freaking night. Did anyone else notice the bobbleheads behind Sean Scott? Can you play this video? Look at these. Oh, okay. Yes. Oh, good. Okay, so I'm watching this and I'm at home last night. And I was like, I have never seen anyone nod their head so aggressively. And I tried it myself. And I was like, okay. And it hurts. Like, I think I pulled something. Try it. I was like, ow, that actually is painful. Try to nod your head like that. Doesn't that hurt a little bit?
A little bit,
like,
yeah.
The back of my neck, it hurt. Yes, like. I couldn't. I was like, where'd you get these people from? Are they aliens? Just like, he's like, whoever can nod the most aggressively, stand right behind me. The whole time, just like, I just couldn't. Literally, try that at home and tell me it doesn't hurt your neck to nod that aggressively.
Oh, the whole time.
The real winners that we've got in the Democratic Socialist is something else. All right. So it just so happens that Bob Ferguson also had a press conference yesterday. Let's just keep rolling. Sorry, Nicole. She's still recovering from the neck injury. And it was about, they were doing the certification of the elections. But he, of course, is going to be able to come up with his very first budget sort of on his own. Because when he was sworn in this earlier this year, the process had already begun without him. And he is suggesting that he is going to craft an all cuts, no new revenue budget.
To bridge it with cuts only, no new taxes.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the plan. Yeah.
Just to be 100% clear, because I don't think I have heard this before. The budget proposal you're putting out here in a couple of weeks, it will not include any proposals for new revenue. It will be a cuts only budget to bridge the budget shortfall.
That's where I'm at. It's still the same, that I don't plan on balancing the budget mm-hmm. with revenue.
Okay.
That's correct. And so, now, look, I want to be clear. We've still got weeks to go here, and we're mm-hmm. going to use those weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a fluid situation, as you might imagine, but that is our focus right now.
Got you. And he says that his calendar, jam-packed with meetings with lawmakers talking about where the cuts are going to come from.
You know, it's not like we're at a point where I can say, hey, we have now closed this multi-billion dollar shortfall, and now we're just finalizing the budget. That's not where we're at. We're still very much in the difficult decision mode. Mm-hmm. If you look at my schedule, I'm sure it shows multiple budget meetings every single day at this stage and has been for some time. So they're only adding to them, not lessening them, because we're still trying to close that out.
Oh, okay. Look at your schedule. Okay, let's look at his calendar, shall we? Can we pull up his calendar, Nicole? Oh, that's right. He won't provide his calendar to the media unless we file public disclosure requests, breaking with the tradition of previous governors who have made their public calendars available to us without having to jump through hoops. And even legacy media has pointed out that his calendar and where he is at any given moment seems to be one big fat secret. So is he actually having meetings talking about cuts? I guess we'll never know. My guess is probably not. So he explained to the reporters there that even if I wanted to pass new taxes, we just passed the largest tax increase in state history. And so I'm not sure where the new taxes will go and come from, where the money will come from.
Why take that approach? I mean, why not consider more revenue at this juncture?
Well, as I said before, no. If we had a new revenue, it's not going to mm-hmm. solve your problem next year.
Mm-hmm.
The dollars don't come in, you know, in time to do it. Even if I wanted to, and that's something I was interested in, it doesn't actually solve the problem next year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a rally that the legislature is going to have to grapple with as well. I'm not signing an increase in the sales tax,
mm-hmm.
not signing an increase in the property tax. Those things aren't happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and those are sort of the main levers that the state has to quickly do it. So, yeah.
So he says no increase in sales tax. That's off the table. No increase in property tax. He claims that's off the table. Do you believe him? This is a guy who ran for governor this time last year, promising he was going to be a budget hawk. We've talked about it a million times. I'm a total broken record. And then he turned around and passed the largest tax increase in state history within 3 months. So do you believe him? I mean, this is more definitive, I will say, than he was last year. Last year, he sort of was like, we're going to look at cuts first, we're going to make hard decisions, and then we'll see. And he wouldn't commit. He wasn't saying in the first 3 months of the year, absolutely not. We're not increasing the sales tax. We're not increasing the property tax. We're doing a cuts-only budget. He was basically saying, wait and see. And I think that's because he knew all along they were going to pass new taxes. He wanted Democrats in the legislature to have to own it, to be the ones to send them to him. And then he would be like, oh, my hands are tied. I have to sign it. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you trust Bob? Do you trust what he's saying right now, that he's not going to raise taxes? Nicole, yes or no?
Well, I think he cannot do those two things.
Yes, I think.
And survive another election. So,
that's wishful thinking. But yeah. Well, we actually, in our closing sanity check, have an example about how he could absolutely do those two things and survive another election.
I guess he could, but not that blatantly.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that I think on those two, the fact that he absolutely said, we are not doing that, he's a snake and a liar, but I don't know. So I'm going to say, I don't trust him at all. I think they will end up, especially if the pressure from the left flank gets too severe. Because, I mean, Sean Scott even painted them as the actions he took as a Trump actions,
right.
Trump-like actions.
But
so we'll see how much
to clarify, they can still pass new taxes in the next session. He's saying this budget,
his
budget has to be cut, or it has to make cuts. Otherwise, it won't be legal. That's
he's saying, cuts only. Right now, our subscribers are 99%. Do you want to guess which? No.
No trust
there. John Peluso, once bit, twice shy. Yeah, I mean, once he's at this point, he'd have to prove that he's being honest, because he's been so dishonest. Weisscastle says, I trust that he was lying. Yes. Brian, never trust a Democrat when they promise anything other than raising taxes. Jet Fuel Genius, haha, as if. Paul says, hell to the no. Hell to the no, Brandy. This is a good one, Mark. So do liars become politicians, or do politicians become liars? That's a really good question. I think just liars are well equipped to become politicians. Let's see. Let's read one more. Let me jet over quick to locals for a comment. Just sensible. Are you kidding me? Don't make me laugh. Look up liar in the dictionary and you will see his photo. This must be a popular saying because Brett on locals also said once bitten, twice shy. I've never heard that.
You haven't?
I've heard like fool me once. Oh, no, shame on you. Fool me twice. Shame. Once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'll add that
it's
to
fun.
My lexicon.
It is from,
I'm sure it's,
oh,
about
it's a song
snake.
By Great White.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Once bitten, twice shy. I learn new things from you guys all the time. All right. Coming up next, we're talking about elections there. And I don't believe him either. And we'll continue to hold him accountable, even if, and let me just revisit this quick, even if I've heard behind the scenes that the press corps and the Capitol Correspondents Association is once again colluding with Democrats to try to keep us out of Olympia. And my question would be like, what is the purpose of that? What is the purpose of that? You have reporters who might show up in person, but hardly ask any questions. Even that press conference you just saw with Bob, there was three reporters around the table. 10 years ago, that table used to be full. And so is it better to have some people there asking questions, even if we do opinion? Or is it better to have none? And I'm sorry, if you're showing up at press conferences like the Sean Scott press conference and you don't have one question, not one, why are you there? What's the point? What is the purpose of you being there? So we will fight tooth and nail, even if we have to, again, threaten to sue, to make sure that every independent media outlet, I don't care if it's the freaking Burner, that rag little podcast that was started by the Stranger Rejects, even if it's them, we will fight for them. Why are you laughing? I met both of them yesterday in person. They're actually pretty nice. But it's still, they're still fucking cuckoo. Sorry, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Wow. But we will fight. I will fight tooth and nail for them. And I will be in solidarity with them and anyone else who's going to be blocked from speaking to politicians and asking the questions that their readers and viewers and listeners want to hear. There is an entire swath of this state that is not well represented by the legacy media in Olympia. They don't ask the kind of questions that a big chunk of this state who's tired of taxes, who's tired of the woke ideology and stuff, want to have asked. So even if I do opinion, were those not legitimate questions that I had for Sean Scott? And if the chicks at the Burner want to ask questions on behalf of their small socialist audience up on Capitol Hill, they ought to be able to do that. That's their freaking job. And it's the job of politicians to answer questions that are asked of them, no matter how unpleasant it might be. So I think we have another fight on their hands, but I love a good fight. All right. Gives me joy. I love this job. I have so much fun. Thanks for letting us do it. I really do appreciate you guys. All right, we're talking about elections. The DOJ is making good on its threat to sue Washington State and other blue states for withholding voter data. We'll talk about that next. First, some other folks that are going to be down in Olympia this session are the Rental Housing Association of Washington. They are your eyes and ears in Olympia. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, they're trying to make sure that housing providers in our state don't continue to be vilified and have all these new laws and regulations put on them, like rent control. I know they're working hard to try to get some reconsideration on rent control. So there's a couple things they can help you with if you become a member. One is just navigating all the rules and laws and paperwork to make sure that you're in compliance so you don't have old Nick Brown or Bob Fergie Ferguson coming after you for some reason to make an example out of you. And then, of course, they are your advocates in Olympia. So support the RHA today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. All right, so back in, let me check the date of this letter, on September 8th of this year, the Department of Justice sent a letter to the Honorable Steve Hobbs, Secretary of State, requesting compliance to complete Washington's voter registration list with all fields. So there are certain states, blue states, many of them, that are refusing and continue to refuse to send the Department of Justice information that the DOJ believes will help the feds determine whether there are illegal aliens voting in our elections and, of course, other issues, you know, dead people on voter rolls or whatever it might be. And so they've requested all the fields. That includes last four of a Social Security number. That can include a driver's license number, depending on how you confirmed your identity or how, you know, you're registered. And the state of Washington has said it will provide some stuff, but we're not going to provide other stuff. And they're citing privacy and just refusing to do it. You'll remember we had Secretary of State Steve Hobbs on the show. I think it was on Election Day or the day before the election. We brought up this issue with him. And he basically said, I'm just waiting for them to sue me.
I'm waiting for them to issue me a summons.
Well, your wish is their command. your command is, your wish is their command. Harmeet Dhillon, who's the assistant attorney general in the Civil Rights Division, posted this yesterday. Today, we civil rights at Civil Rights sued Delaware, Maryland, New Mexico, Rhode Island, Washington, and Vermont for failing to comply with the Justice Department election data demands. Compliance is not optional, nor is election integrity. So one of the things that I had brought up with Secretary of State Steve Hobbs when he was on the show is, why is this a privacy concern to you? Because one of the fields that they are refusing to provide are the last four digits of the Social Security numbers of registered voters. Well, who issues Social Security numbers? Well, God, the federal government does. So how can you say that that is information that should be kept from the federal government when it's information that they gave to people, when it's a number they gave to people? So Secretary Hobbs was at this press conference to certify the election results, and he was asked about this.
Well, because it's about states' rights. It's about not just giving in just because they request it. It's also about following the law. Mm-hmm. The law is very clear, our state law and federal law. And asking a simple question about, hey, what are you gonna do with the data and receiving nothing except Dhillon supposedly probably slipped this information to the news media, and that's why I heard about this lawsuit. But the only other communication we've had is her being on a conservative right-wing talk show. I mean, I'm willing, my office is willing, to work with DOJ on providing the list without the personal information, without the stuff that we keep private. And I'm willing to do that.
Okay. I don't like him using the phrase right wing. I think he's talking about Jason Rantz because Harmeet Dhillon was on their Jason Rantz show. Jason is not right wing. He's conservative, yes, but he uses it as an insult, right? And he's supposed to be someone who's better than that. So Steve Hobbs, if you watch this, you're better than that, than to label anyone who disagrees with your questions what you do right wing. After all, your own party shunned you for being too moderate. So I would be more careful with how you label people if you want to continue to be considered a moderate, reasonable person and a Democrat, a moderate, reasonable Democrat. But that's the first time I've heard him use that argument. We had him on at length. What did we do, a 25-minute interview or something like that? And he did not bring up that this was because of states' rights. He didn't bring that up. And if it was a Democrat in the presidency who was asking for information, do you think that they'd put up such a fight? No. So the privacy argument doesn't hold water because it makes no sense. The states' rights argument doesn't hold water because they're requesting a list of people and data that is used for people to vote in federal elections. If this was just data and information used for elections in Washington state, for local and state elections, that's different. But the federal government, the presidency, Congress, there are implications if we have illegals voting, if we have dead people on the voter rolls, or whatever the problem might be. You can't say that that's specifically a state's right issue because the elections here have consequences for every other state in the union and the federal government. So none of it makes any sense. It's just about fighting Donald Trump. So now we're going to be in a lawsuit with the federal government. Nick Brown, the attorney general, just filed his 45th lawsuit against Donald Trump in the last 10 months, 45 in 10 months. In case you can't do the math, carry the five. That's 4.5 a month. Right. OK. Yes. That's ridiculous. That's such a waste of time. And for what? If there's nothing, if there's no there there, then providing that information will prove that there's no there there. I don't think we have illegals voting rampantly in a way that necessarily impacts the outcome of the election. But if you, and this is what you've said, if you don't think that's happening, then providing the information will prove it once and for all. And you can say, see, told you so. We don't have a big problem with election integrity, but they won't do it. And you heard him allude to it there. And it's one thing that I think California brought up as part of all of this is they're worried that that data will be used for immigration enforcement. Why would you be worried that voter data would be used by ICE for immigration enforcement? What reason would they have to use it? What cause to use it for immigration enforcement unless those people were in the country illegally? And then they shouldn't be on the voter rolls. So there's a lot of nonsense here. The Washington State Republican Party put out a lengthy statement about this. I would just want to bring your attention to the last two paragraphs. They said, if the state government loses this lawsuit, which is likely, it will be a win for Washington election integrity, but a loss for Washington state taxpayers, who will ultimately foot the bill for Ferguson, Brown, and Hobbs and their recklessness. Washington still needs to pass IL-26-126, the voter ID initiative. It will align state election law and best practices with federal law and make lawsuits like this unnecessary. And frankly, there should be some consistency. Because, again, all the votes, no matter how you vote, whether you're an in-person state, vote-by-mail state like ours, whatever it is, we should just have consistency across the board. Because at the end of the day, we're all electing president. We're all electing members of Congress. I just feel like we should have the same standards state to state for how we verify that someone is able to vote, how we clean our voter rolls, how we cast our votes. It makes no sense to have this piecemeal system. I really don't understand it anymore. So I guess lawsuit it is. So he got his wish. They're serving him, and this will be fought in court. All right, coming up next, we'll have our segment, The Seattle Times is Trash, spreading more fear-mongering about ICE immigration efforts. First, with talk of an AI bubble, are you concerned about the strength of your retirement portfolio? If the answer is no, or I don't know, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. They can give you advice on how to best protect your investments. They'll talk about the impact AI is having on the market, give you a preview for 2026, and talk about how critical Bulwark's deployment of value investing is to retirement portfolios. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review. And while you're there at knowyourriskpodcast.com, you can subscribe to Zach's daily market recap to keep track of things. All of that at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Their goal at Bulwark is always to lower risk, lower cost, and give your hard-earned retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, the Seattle Times. Dogged journalists will never miss out on an opportunity to vilify lawful immigration efforts. Let's talk about it in our segment. The Seattle Times is Trash. You know, it shocks me. No, it doesn't. Why do I keep saying I'm shocked by bad reporting? I'm not shocked by bad reporting. It's stunning, I think, though, that you still have media outlets who jump on these narratives about ICE, even though they've been burned so many times. How many stories have we done and seen nationally where what happened isn't what actually happened, but they jump on the story too quickly and then they never correct it, they don't verify it? It's because they're trying to push a narrative. And their point of view is very clear. Like, this is evil, what the Trump administration is doing. Even if it's lawful, it's evil and horrible. So the Seattle Times takes that to a new level with this. The headline of their latest story, "An atmosphere of fear surrounds childcare after ICE detention." So it's, this thing is written like a novel. And that just shows you they're trying to elicit a certain kind of emotion from you. And it's a news story. I mean, they should be pointing out, here's what happened, and letting you decide how to feel about it. But no, they have to make it, set this dramatic scene, heart-wrenching scene, to paint ICE as evil. Even though, as you'll read in the details of their own story, ICE was actually very kind and considerate to this woman when it came to helping make sure her child was taken care of. So let's read this together, shall we? "It was a Thursday morning like any other. A mother was driving her 4-year-old son to his preschool in Issaquah, but their routine ended very differently after she was pulled over by law enforcement officers in unmarked cars. They did not identify the agency they worked with and told her she was being stopped for speeding. The officers allowed the mother to drop the child off, following her to the Spanish immersion preschool, where she asked the staff to let her inside, saying she believed the agents were with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. The preschool staff declined to hide her. Agents eventually detained the mother outside the preschool. They didn't identify themselves as immigration agents until they had handcuffed her. She was deported in early November and is now back in her country of origin. The immigration enforcement action has hit close to home for the childcare industry in Washington, where many of the workers and many families include immigrants. Not only was the mother detained outside the preschool, but an armed agent rang the doorbell a few minutes later." So basically, I read all of that and I say, okay, so she's in the country illegally. They had cause to believe she was. She had her child in the car. They allowed her to take her child to the preschool, drop her child off before taking her into custody. That sounds like they actually went above and beyond to make sure that it was there was as little trauma to the child as possible.
Right. And as far as ringing the doorbell, I'm sure an agent went up there and said, "Hey, we're going to take this parent in. You might want to call their next of
right.
kin or whoever's on the emergency contact.
So the child's just not left here all day and nobody picks him up at the end of the day. I guarantee that's what it was.
They have a gun on them.
And I also want to know, did they actually confirm, and how did they confirm any of these details they share from the mom as if they're fact, right?
Right.
That they said they didn't identify themselves. Right. They said that they were taking, that she was speeding. You know, how did they actually verify any of that? My guess is going to be no. Mm-hmm. And if they did, I'll apologize. But mm-hmm. I guarantee, because or else they would have said, you know, a video showed or a recording showed or ICE confirmed. No, they didn't confirm any of it. They're just taking her word for it and putting it out there. So now this instance has everyone scared and on edge. And we'll get to how many of these instances there have been, but let me tell you, it's not enough to make the whole childcare industry scared and on edge. It says childcare providers often have ties to immigrant communities. In Washington state, 26% of early educators were born outside the U.S. The anxiety is also being felt by families who fear getting stopped by immigration authorities while taking their children to childcare. This affects young children, too, who absorb what's happening in their environment like sponges. Genevieve Stokes, director of government relations at Child Care Aware of Washington, says the ICE actions are causing trauma and disruption to everyone that the child care system touches. Okay, but again, let's assign some blame here. Whose fault is that? Whose fault is that, that this child is dealing with uncertainty and trauma? I would say, and this is my show, so this is, you know, my right to make my opinion known. I would say it's the parents' fault. You came into the country illegally, sometimes with a child, dragged them through unspeakable circumstances to get here. Or you came here illegally and had a child while you were here, knowing that you were illegal, knowing it was against the law, and knowing that one day immigration could knock on your door or could pull you over and take you into custody, and you thought that would be worth it, even knowing the trauma that would cause your child to remain in the United States. So the left in the Seattle Times blames immigration and customs enforcement, even though this is the law. It has been. It's been the law under Democrats. It's been the law under Republicans. It was a law utilized by Biden and Obama and everyone before them. But it's a problem because it's Donald Trump. That's the issue here. I blame the parents. I blame the person who, and we don't hear this. This is another thing. We don't really hear this level of outrage when it's a U.S. citizen wanted for a crime who's arrested and separated from their child. You're driving drunk. You got a child in the car. Guess what? You're going to jail and they're taking your child. You go to prison or go to jail? I mean, the woman who I talked about who got charged with harassment for threatening to come to my home on TikTok, she has a kid. Why aren't we like, oh my God, up in arms that she might have to go to jail and separate from her child? No, because that happens. We have laws. You break the law, there's consequences for that. It might mean separating you from your child. There is far more anger and outrage over separating an illegal alien from their child than an American citizen who gets in trouble for whatever it might be, who said, even if you get caught shoplifting or something as an adult, they're going to take you to jail and they're going to separate you from your child in most instances, at least in sane states. But no, this is about Donald Trump, right? Let's read some more. Fearful families. Talk about a woman named Alexis. Her youngest child is 2.5, and she has sent a certified copy of the girl's birth certificates to her child care provider. Both the Pierce County mom and her daughter are U.S. citizens, but Alexis's ex-husband, this is a different example they're giving, but Alexis's ex-husband, the child's father, is a green card holder. The Seattle Times is not using her full name because she fears her family members may be targeted by immigration enforcement. Her ex takes care of the child for several days every other week, including bringing her to childcare, but he expressed worry about doing so, especially after the Issaquah incident. Alexis said she's monitored the daycare's app to be sure their child was dropped off safely. She worries if her ex-husband gets stopped by immigration authorities on the way to daycare, no one will call her or even check that their child is a U.S. citizen. They're not even going to check. They're just going to say, you got a kid with you? Huh, back to Mexico for both of you. It's just absolutely ridiculous. She's not even illegal. The child's not illegal. So they have nothing to worry about. And even if there is an instance where we have to figure out you're with someone who's illegal, we've got to verify that you're here legally. You've got to provide some sort of proof of that. I think that's reasonable, right? We can't just take your word. You're going to get let go. It's going to be fine. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous.
And based on this example, she should feel okay. Her child will get dropped off.
Right, dropped off somewhere.
And then she'll get called and nothing will happen with the kid.
So here's an interesting angle of this as well that we wanted to point out. It's a good catch by Nicole. It says childcare workers at licensed facilities, as well as license exempt in-home providers eligible to get state subsidies, must pass state criminal background checks. And the agency, quote, evaluates whether that information relates directly to child safety and well-being. Okay. So if you're working at one of these childcare facilities that's licensed by the state, you have to pass a state criminal background check. And I understand that second aspect of it where they say, we'll evaluate whether that information relates to child safety. Because I think, you know, if you've got like some sort of like theft from 10 years ago and it's not direct, it's not, doesn't make you a danger to children. Right. I think that's fine. So they're
using
reason.
Or you've a DUI, but you've done all the work, 15 years.
Yeah. Right. Like, mm-hmm. Okay. So it's not automatically going to be disqualifying. So all that's fine. But it says, Gutierrez said the agency's background check process does not verify a person's immigration status or their eligibility to work in the U.S. And we know that because it's a sanctuary state. So they're not looking at your immigration status, whether you can even work in the U.S. in order for you to work at a child care facility. But obviously, what's the problem with that? Okay, so you're doing a state background check and you're not checking to see if they're a lawful resident of the United States. So what's missing in that equation in order to determine whether someone is actually fit to work around kids? You don't know what they did in their home country. We had an example of this out of Brazil, where a guy was hired in Kirkland to be a theater instructor, but he was on the lam from Brazil. But they didn't check his criminal history in Brazil, so they have no idea. You could literally have... What about Paco? What about Paco? Who was a wanted murderer out of Mexico? So you can do a state background check on these people working at these child care facilities, but if they're in the country illegally, it literally means nothing, because they could be murderers. They could be child rapists. They could have served time in their home country for raping a child, and none of it, because of our sanctuary laws, would show up if they try to get a job at a child care facility. That's outrageous. You can't say that you know whether someone will be a threat to a child if you haven't completed a full background check on them, and that would include whatever has happened in other countries. But they don't even know if the person's from another country. As far as they're concerned, they're just an American citizen who's been here their whole life and has no state history in Washington. And it goes on to say, in terms of, you know, this whole story and this whole saga of, oh my gosh, it's a says a spokesperson for DCYF said the agency had received three such reports in 2025 of ICE immigration efforts statewide happening in or around or involving a child care facility. One was from an applicant for a childcare license who'd been detained. So not even involving a kid. An adult who wanted a childcare license. Oh, it turned out they were in the country illegally, so thank God ICE detained them. So that isn't even relevant to this tale they're spinning. One from a provider who reported that a parent had been detained outside their center, which was the Issaquah incident. And a third from a provider who self-deported. So there's only one. They have three examples from Trump's second term. Only one of them involved anything that a kid even witnessed or saw or was involved in. And it was the chick in Issaquah. The other one was a guy letting the state know, I'm self-deporting. I'm not dealing with this. Good for him, by the way. I think he got $1,000 out of that, right? $1,000 to self-deport. And then the other one was, I'm trying to become a childcare provider. Well, ICE detained me, so I guess I don't need that license anymore. And the Seattle Times, so now there's really one instance. And the Seattle Times paints it as something that has caused trauma and disruption, quote, the ICE actions are causing trauma and disruption to everyone that the childcare system touches. One instance in Issaquah, and the ICE agents were even nice enough to let her take her kid and drop her child off. The Seattle Times is straight trash. Best thing that could happen to Washington State is for the Seattle Times to go bankrupt. It's my new song. Do you like it? I just wrote it.
Beautiful.
On the spot. I'm basically an artist. All right, we'll get to some national news that has local ties coming up next. First, Valentine Roofing, our wonderful sponsors, have just been named the best roofing company in the Pacific Northwest for a third year in a row, and they do more than just roofing. In fact, this time of year, they do custom holiday lights, which I think is a great option if you're just dreading hanging up your holiday lights. Very affordable as well. They also do gutter installation and cleaning, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, or if you need a new roof, roof, or maybe you've got a leak or something, they'll come, they'll check it out. If they can repair it, they will. They won't push you into buying a new roof. But if you do need a new roof, they do have flexible financing options, including zero down, zero interest. Taking care of your home has never been easier. The company's mission at Valentine, to serve and care for their neighbors with the purpose of creating a long-lasting impact and peace of mind. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING and please tell them that you heard about them here on Undivided. We would appreciate you doing business with the people who do business with us. All right, some national news. Oh, they're not going to like this. All right, USDA secretary is threatening to cut funding to blue states over alleged SNAP data non-compliance. So the states that might be in trouble here that were as not compliant, they did provide a list of the states that had not handed over their data, but those not mentioned as compliant. Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Washington, and Wisconsin. So U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins threatened to cut off federal funding to these blue states, many of them. Pennsylvania, although I guess it's still, you know, comes and goes, swing state. over what she alleged is their refusal to share SNAP program data with the Trump administration. According to Rollins, the administration will begin to stop moving federal funds into those states starting this coming week, unless there is compliance. And so we're going to continue to see this meltdown in our state. But again, why are you hiding data? This is a federal program. So you should, whatever the federal program is, if you qualify or you are getting funds from the federal government for that program, you should comply with their requirements or else you don't get the money. Why is that such a difficult concept? I don't think it is.
That lady that in the wheelchair at the press conference yesterday.
Right. How am I going to do this? Oh, my God. How am I going to do this?
It's every 3 months? Well, if you're not working.
you should have to prove. Now, if you have a permanent disability, I don't believe they should make you reapply. And I don't know if that's the case. I don't think that's the case. Every 3 months would be, or she said like every 3 weeks or something. It's like, okay.
Check a box.
Check a box, whatever it is. But she's acting like she can't even begin the process of figuring out how she has to do it while she's working on a master's degree. Doesn't make any sense. Okay. Another national story. This is a really feel-good story. I love this. So Trump talked about and pitched the idea of these Trump accounts for children and for newborns. And to say, hey, you know, let's set kids off on the right footing and let's put a little bit of money in account for them and their family can contribute to that account as well, and it can grow and grow and grow over time. It's like giving a little kid a beginning of a 401k instead of them waiting until they're 18 or 19 or 20 and working. So this is happening. I guess we're going to hear more details on December 17th, but there's some great news out of this. So the One Big Beautiful Bill permits Trump accounts to be established for American children who have not reached age 18. So it doesn't even have to be for newborn kids. If you're under the age of 18, once this begins, then you're going to be fine. So an American child born after December 31st, 2024, and before January 1st, 2029, for whom a Trump account is established, will receive an additional $1,000 deposit from the government, with the potential for parents to contribute up to an additional $5,000 per year initially. Employers can also help with this, which I love. So it can be a benefit you offer your employee. Hey, we'll contribute to your child's Trump account. I mean, I'm sure they'll hate the fact that it's called a Trump account and the next president will change it.
Yeah, but I'm sure they won't hate the tax breaks that I'm sure that they'll get from it.
Yeah, so employers may make an annual contribution of up to $2,500 to a Trump account, and that contribution will not impact the employee's taxable income. So the estimates are that under a scenario of average returns to the U.S. stock market, Trump account balances for a baby born in 2026 will be $303,000 by age 18 and $1 million by age 28 if the maximum contributions are made. That is amazing. If no contribution at all is made, the initial $250 or $1,000, depending on what you're going to qualify for, $5,800 by age 18, $18,000 by age 28. Even if you make no other contributions, mm-hmm. That's amazing. That's great. And here is the best part. So Dell, the Dell family, and they're like billionaires, they've come in and made a multi-billion dollar, do we have a cut from the Dells? Mm-hmm. Multi-billion dollar donation to help fund the Trump account so they don't have to use so much taxpayer money.
To philanthropists, companies, community leaders, if you want to be part of something truly meaningful for our kids, for our communities, for our country, join us.
And to parents and caregivers, stay tuned and get ready to activate your child's account. Every contribution can grow over the years, just like your child.
Together, we can make possibility something every child can count on.
And that's a future worth investing in.
I love that. They're giving $6.25 billion. $6.25 billion, which will help 25 million children, and that's money the taxpayers don't have to pay in. Here's President Trump.
The Dells are announcing today that they are giving 25 million American children $250 each to save and to invest in their personal Trump account. Trump accounts will be the first, I guess you could say, real trust funds for every American child, allowing family members, employers, corporations, generous donors to contribute money that will be invested and grow over the course of a child's life to be used for their benefit after they turn 18. These accounts will track the overall stock market and will be 100% private property controlled by the child's guardians. To put it succinctly, Michael and Susan are giving $6.25 billion in total, and as a total contribution. That's big stuff. I don't care who you are. These gifts will be available to the first 25 million children aged 10 and under the sign, the zip codes, where their median income is $150,000 or less.
That's amazing. I would love to see how the media is melting down about this. Not only are, I'm sure it's because it's the Trump account. I'm sure that's the only problem they'll find with it, is you're calling it, oh, he's so narcissistic. Fine, change the name. Don't care. And to get, and this is something he's able to do that other presidents just aren't, he gets rich people to give their money, like to the ballroom, pay for the ballroom, so taxpayers don't have to do it. And so now the Dells are saying, and you heard them in the video, encouraging other people to contribute to basically the future of America. And I also love that they're not limiting the income so much, because $100,000, $50,000 a year where the median income is, or the zip codes that will benefit from this for families. And depending on where you are, $150,000, if you have a family in Washington State and in Seattle, like, that's not a lot of money. You don't have a lot of extra to save. And I also like that he calls it a trust fund. It's basically because he got a trust fund, right? But this is a trust fund for regular Americans and their kids, and it will make them not as reliant on things like Social Security. And I think it just starts them off on a good foot. Financial freedom. I wasn't a huge fan of it when I thought it was going to be fully taxpayer funded, but the idea that private people are coming in to fund it, and I think that will take off and become a very popular thing to do. I think it's great.
I hope it's what I have seen is that people are attacking them because now their stocks have gone up and now they're richer.
Oh, God.
And,
okay.
This is a big write-off for them, and this is a big...
So they want these companies to be more generous.
Wealth transfer.
They want these companies to be more generous. Yep. You're evil. You don't do enough. Oh, and then you do enough and you get positive press and then you become richer and now you're evil again. Screw you. Screw not
it's
you guys,
terrible.
But you know what I mean. Just wild. We'll get to comments coming up next. First, we heard from a viewer who had a little bit of an insurance scare. She got this notice that her insurance carrier was going to dissolve, and she freaked out because she has a complicated insurance policy. She's got two businesses, three cars, a home. Well, she did what I've been telling her to do. Call First Mark Insurance. Take the First Mark Challenge. There's a reason so many Undivided viewers and members are members of the First Mark family, as am I, as is Nicole, as is Undivided as a business. And that's because First Mark is fantastic. They're going to take care of everything for you. They'll go out, they'll shop the market, come back with their recommendations. And of course, they want to make sure you have good insurance. You don't want to, you know, like these online tools where you just find the cheapest insurance. Well, it's probably crap insurance. And if something actually happens, it's not going to cover you, and it's not going to cover everything you've worked hard for. So this is a quality service, a quality product, and just quality people making sure you have the right insurance at the right price. So reach out to First Mark, set up time to do the First Mark Challenge. Christine, when she did that, saved $10,000 a year, which is amazing. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. All right, some comments from the live stream today on Sean Scott's plan to pass a new statewide payroll tax. Old Sub Sailor, $50 super chat. Whew. Do I have to take my shirt off for that one? No? Okay. Well done, Brandy. What is the level of a super chat where I would take my shirt off?
Oh.
Give me $10,000. No, it would have to be more than that because it's shame. I'm not saying like take everything off.
Right.
You know, $100,000? What is it?
Just the top layer.
There's got to be a number that exists. for you, Nicole, not me. I can't do it. Yeah.
Right.
Old South Taylor, anyway. Well done, Brandy, the only real reporter in that crowd. I'm professional, obviously, as you can tell. Quite the professional. Bill Biz, aggressive bobbleheads, best description ever. I mean, did you try it? How do you even? I can't nod like that even if I tried. You got that video again? Is it too far? It's so, look at that. Doesn't that hurt? Doesn't that hurt your neck?
Maybe with the lip pierce, it's easier.
Maybe, yeah. It just adds a little a kind of a counterbalance, if you will, to help the bobblehead go. Are they even human? What's going on?
My favorite part was when he said 150 people came here.
Yeah.
And then he pointed to the 20.
There was 34. I counted every head. There was 34. And he said that was proof that they didn't have enough taxes, that many people were willing to come down during a weekday. I was like, 150? Like, you are not good at judging a crowd size. Stephanie Hicks, I'm glad you pointed this out too. I'm concerned about the person behind him wearing a shirt saying, "Tax me, mommy." Yikes.
I saw her. Yeah.
Creepy. It was like sexual. Now you're making taxes sexual. Let me see. Yeah, Mike Darr. He brings up the ballroom. I thought donors and Trump himself were funding this. They are, and he has a problem with that. Oh, if they have enough money to contribute to Trump's ballroom, they have enough money to pay the payroll tax. Lockman, you too. I would bet that other reporters appreciated the questions Brandy asked because their networks probably won't let those reporters ask them. I don't know what the problem is. Is it laziness? Is it indifference? And I get it. Not everybody's all jazzed up on politics. But if you're showing up at a press conference, you can muster one question. One question. Allison, I think in Washington State, poverty and homelessness is a business. It will never get better because they can't launder money. I 100% agree. Moon Goddess, it's dangerous because they have stolen the money. Yeah, how could you characterize a question about our budget as dangerous? It's dangerous for me to ask, how do we not have money to pay for basics when we have, you know, $73 or $77 billion budget? It's wild. On the governor, Bob Ferguson, saying he is focused on cuts. Matt said, notice he said nothing about income tax. Well, he said that he's not going to balance the budget with new taxes. It's going to be a cuts-only budget. So that would, I think, include the income tax. But he said he's open to a wealth tax. Remember last session? He said he's open to a narrow wealth tax to test it in the courts. So that is a good question. And he didn't specifically, you listened to the whole thing, right?
I did, but what he said was the only taxes that were available to him that would give him money for this budget
right away
is property and sales. And neither of those were on the table for him.
Yeah. So maybe that means he's fine passing taxes, as you said, but just not, they're not going to be used for
this budget.
Interesting. So maybe a little play on words. All right. On the Seattle Times being trash, Abby London. Hi, Abby. Yes. Having criminal parents causes trauma. Oh, 100%.
Right.
Having a lot of different things as parents causes trauma. Sergeant Pickles, the left pretending there were no deportations under Obama or Biden is the wild part. There was a ton of deportations under Biden because there was a ton of people coming in. So they picked the low hanging fruit. Dan Platt, if you're here illegally, then all the consequences are the fault of the illegals that didn't self-deport when given the chance and opportunity to leave on good terms. Right. I mean, that's why the Seattle Times is trash. Just absolutely ridiculous. All right. I promised you a sanity check that would be relevant to the start of our show. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, if you're thinking about selling your home, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Elizabeth did. She gave Wes a 5-star review. I'm so glad I found them, she said. They were exactly what I was looking for when I needed to sell my condo. Working with them was stress-free and no pressure. She says they gave great recommendations on suggested improvements. I was able to pick and choose what I wanted to get done based on my budget. They coordinated everything with the contractor, including receiving and setting up new appliances, etc. They offered up staging, but also gave me realistic expectations on whether I wanted to pay extra for physical staging or just do their virtual staging, which ended up looking amazing. They also recommended price points, but ultimately left it up to me to decide. Love that. 5 stars from Elizabeth for our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. So I would start by just going to sellwithwes.com, using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth, and then setting up time for Wes to give you a free market analysis to set your expectations based on the housing market at any given moment. So sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Nicole made some sort of off-the-cuff comment during the top of the show that Bob wouldn't be able to say he wasn't going to pass new taxes and turn around and do it and still win re-election. And I beg to differ, and this sanity check explains why. All right. So as you know, there was a special election for a congressional seat in Tennessee. And it was, you know, always going to go to the Republican. The Republican who was endorsed by President Trump won last night in the special election when it was held. Now, the Democratic candidate had some unfortunate moments, even though I don't think she was ever going to win. She had some unfortunate moments in the lead up to election night, including being caught on a hot mic. Important to understand, this congressional district includes the city of Nashville, okay? So she was caught on a hot mic saying she hates the city of Nashville.
I've been heavily involved with the Nashville mayoral race because I hate the city. I hate the bachelorettes. I hate the pedal taverns. I hate country music. I hate all of the things that make Nashville, apparently, and its city to the rest of the country. But I hate it.
Hates it. I hate the largest city in the congressional district she was seeking to represent. She hates everything about it. I hate the bachelorettes. I hate the music. I hate the taverns. I hate everything about it. Well, guess what's the only area that Afton Ben won in last night's special election? Nashville. Despite the fact she literally said, "I hate everything about Nashville," Nashville voters gave her 77.7% of the vote. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what we mean when we say vote blue, no matter who. That has been our closing sanity check. That, and how can you hate Nashville? Loser, you sound like no fun. And if I ever have a bachelorette party there, which I won't because I'm married and never plan to get married again, but if I ever go to one there, you're not invited, Afton. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting our work, for giving us the ability to do this job in the way that we want to do it, so I can go down and ask questions of Sean Scott while the rest of the media stays silent. We appreciate it very much. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We will be back with a regular live show tomorrow at noon Pacific time.